Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. I'm up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio, broadcasting to you live all over the world on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live on voiceofvashon.org. My greetings today go out to all members and to all staff of the Steamship Historical Society of America. I've just come back from a trip to the East Coast, to New England, for the annual general meeting and several other events. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the organization. My book today will be a book which was a gift from Amy, the membership coordinator. And my magazine today will be Power Ships, which is the journal of the Steamship Historical Society of America. My binnacle list entry today has both a good and a sad side. The sad side is that it is for me to report the crossing of the bar of a close friend of the poet laureate emeritus of the state of Washington, Sam, Dr. Sam, and also to report the entry into hospice of one of my closest friends. So the crossing of a bar of a close friend, and in this particular case, it was a diagnosis and a crossing of the bar which happened very quickly, and hopefully that crossing was as easy as that kind of thing ever can be. In the case of this close friend, while I was away, I talked to the family and got a report. And this friend was one who came to me through Mary R. The first trip that Mary R. and I ever took together was to a wedding of a nephew in New England, in New Hampshire. And while we were there, Sharon and Jim, for this, those are the names of the friends that came to me through Mary R., were also in New England, and they said, while you're here, let's get together for dinner, and we did. Sharon, who had been, among other things, a flight attendant for a number of years, got me after dinner, and she said, Captain Joe, I'd like to have a private word with you. And so she said, let us convene over behind this Dempster Dumpster in the car park of this restaurant. And so we went over behind the Dempster Dumpster, and she proceeded to give me several groups, the substance of which was that I had better take good care of Mary R., or I would have a visitation from Sharon later on. I did not always do the best, as we never do the very best always in our relationships. But we did pretty well. Over the years, the friendship between or among Sharon and Jim and myself, and especially after Mary R. died and crossed her own bar, became even more intense and stronger. One of the things that I was told in my conversation with the family was that they had decided to move Sharon downstairs and to install a bed downstairs. I take this as an ominous sign. Every time that I am told that someone that I love is being moved downstairs, their crossing of the bar does not come too soon after that, too long after that. The first time that I really noticed this phenomenon was with my good friend Sir Vivian. Sir Vivian Fuchs. Sir Vivian, he who accomplished the mission that Shackleton started out to do, the first transect, the first trip completely across the Antarctic continent. And Sir Vivian accomplished this, and he did this with supposedly the help of many other people, and he's written about this in both of his books. He and I became good friends in Cambridge, and one of the reasons that we became good friends was that he liked to ride in my car, in my Mercedes. And so I would get a telephone call from Eleanor, Lady Fuchs, and she would say, "Captain Joe, Bunny," and I was one of the people that was privileged to call Sir Vivian Bunny. "Bunny needs to go to New Edinburgh's hospital, and he will go only if you take him." So I would drive over there and load Sir Vivian up, and we would go off and have just great, great conversations. There are many stories about my relationship with Sir Vivian Fuchs, but the one which is the connection that I'm making here is that after Mary R. and I had come back to the States and I knew that Sir Vivian, who at this time was well over 90, could not have too much time left. And sure enough, I got a signal from his son. And he said, "We're moving Dad downstairs." When you hear from me, from somebody on this broadcast, I am upstairs. I am in the room that Mary and I shared for all of the time that we lived together in this island, in this house, Captain's Quarters now. And when we did not know it, but toward the end of her life, Mary was having more and more difficulty going up and down those stairs. And I was beginning to work out in my mind the plan as to how we would organize getting ourselves into the downstairs bedroom. And I knew that that was going to be a confrontation that was going to top every other conversation that she and I had ever had. Because in the final analysis, she would always say, "Joseph, whatever you decide is fine with me." And that's how we ended up buying the house that we did. That's how we went to Cambridge together. That's how we took the first trip that we took to Prince Edward Island. There are a number of things in which she, after having made her point, said, "Joseph, whatever you decide is fine with me." And in all of our life together, she never, ever backed down on that. Once she had made that commitment and once we had talked it over and once I had made the decision of what we were going to do, she was always happy with it. Well, not quite always happy, completely happy, but she never said anything like, "That didn't work out quite the way we thought it should or would." But I knew that when the time came to say, "Mary R., we're moving from upstairs where we could lie in our bed together and look up through the skylight and see the Douglas firs, 150-foot-tall Douglas firs, swaying back and forth," and she would say, "Joseph, aren't you concerned that they're going to fall over and fall on us?" And I would always say, "No, Mary R., they're not going to fall on us." So I knew that moving her downstairs was going to be a task and a half. I didn't have to do that, of course. So when the signal goes out that we're moving the captain downstairs, hospice cannot be far behind. We have a long way to go before we get to that point. But I am bringing it up here because not only has Sharon now been moved downstairs, but she is now under the care of hospice. to my friend Sam, of whose work I have, I think I have all of the published ones that he has done. My sincerest sympathies. And to all of Captain Joe's people who are known to me and those who are not yet known to me, whatever their situation is, and I have a couple that are not ready to be declared who they are, but know that not only are all of you in the palm of my hand, but that the concentrated energy of all of Captain Joe's people all over the world goes out to all of you. So last week I went to two meetings of my organizations, and I'm going to talk a little bit about both of them. The first one is that I went to the monthly meeting of the Seattle chapter of the Council of American Master Mariners. I've been a member of this for many years, ever since I was qualified to belong, because to have a full and voting membership, you have to be a captain and you have to have commanded ships of a certain size and a certain tonnage. So I am a member of many years standing. I have a pretty low membership number. But I had not before gotten involved in any of the local activities. And then I went to an AGM in New Orleans, and I met some of the people from the local chapter and had such a great conversation with them. And one of the things that they are particularly concerned about is the young people coming into the industry. And so I get a chance to pontificate with people of like rank and people of like experience and people of like feelings about bringing young people and how these young people should be trained, especially in our merchant marine. And in some cases, they come into the Coast Guard or they come into the Navy, and then they go back and serve under their licenses. It is a wonderful group of people, and uncannily, most of them are of a certain age. One of them is a retired Puget Sound pilot. We've talked on this broadcast before, my relationship to pilots all over the world. I really enjoy talking to them, and I enjoy telling pilot stories, and they, of course, come back at me with captain stories. It's a great relationship. But it is not for everybody, because in order to be a full and active member, you have to have considerable command at sea experience. The second group, though, is the Steamship Historical Society. I've been a member of that, I think, for something like 50 years. The records say 1982, but I think I was a member before that and then for some reason have broken service, sort of like our U.S. Navy has broken service. And so I went to the annual general meeting, which was held in Essex, Connecticut, which is not very far from New London, which is where the Coast Guard Academy is, and that, of course, is where I took the oath for the first time when I was 17. This is a wonderful group of people, not all of them, in fact, probably the majority of them have not gone to sea. They have done other things, but they are interested in the history of the maritime world. The membership director is a young lady by the name of Amy, and Amy and I have created a particularly valuable and treasured by me friendship. So one day I had a signal from her and she said, "Captain Joe, do you know of the ship of the book called The Great Ice Ship Bear by Polly Burroughs. And I said, Amy, I've never heard of it. And she said, well, we have two copies of it. And when you come to the meeting, you are coming to the meeting, are you not? Yes, I am. I'm going to give you one of the copies of it. And so that's my book today. It's called The Great Ice Ship Bear, 89 Years in Polar Seas. Now, biographies of ships are not uncommon. There are a number of them out there. And one of them has to do with the wind class. One of the people that I met at this meeting was a man who had written a two-part biography of the wind class icebreakers. And, of course, my Northwind was the lead ship in the wind class. I've not read those articles yet, and they are headed my way, no doubt. Amy, I know that you are listening. If you're not listening today, you'll be listening to this soon. I'm reminding you that I was promised the articles about the wind class. So at the meeting itself, Amy presented me with a copy of The Great Ice Ship Bear, 89 Years in Polar Seas. And it talks about the what was the Revenue Cutter Bear, was the Coast Guard Cutter Bear, was commanded by Mike Healy at one time, and Mike Healy is the person for whom the present Coast Guard Cutter Healy, for whom I am the Sea Daddy, was named. But it is a wonderful book, and I read it reads very quickly, and I was reading it as I made my travels. Parenthetical insertion here, in one of the flights that I had to take for this particular trip, there was a young lady there with a very large yellow Labrador service dog. Aircraft and service dogs were not designed to be compatible together. End of parenthetical insertion. So in reading through this, I came to a section of Bear after Healy was no longer her captain. And there is a little bit of a discussion about Healy's career and a court-martial that he was subjected to at the end of his career. I'm not going to get into that here, although it might be interesting at some time for me to do a piece just about Mike Healy and then connect him to the present Coast Guard Cutter Healy. But in any case, there's a segment in here in which it was decided to move a herd of reindeer. And those reindeer were collected together, and they were loaded into the Cutter Bear. And I was reminded that I had required my much-loved Northwind to carry a herd of muskox on behalf of the Greenland Home Rule government. I've told the story here about that. And one of the things that I may have said, but I'm going to repeat it here, was that the captain in Northwind at the time, and this was when I was the ice boss, it was in my twilight tour in the Coast Guard, and it was my duty to tell the incumbent captain, who was one of my oldest and closest Coast Guard friends, Captain Kastner is now across his own bar. It really is another parenthetical insertion. I'm talking here about people that I loved and cared about, and they've crossed the bar, and I'm still here. So in this book about Bear, there's a photograph of hoisting reindeer and how they were taken care of as they were deck cargo in the Cutter Bear, then it was the Revenue Cutter Service. Now, of course, it's the Coast Guard. And I was just reminded that in the Arctic, that icebreaker captains have to do sometimes things that they don't want to do. And Captain Castor, who was the captain in Northwind at the time that I gave him this operations order, certainly did not want to do that. And I heard about it after the mission was completed, successfully completed. But the point I make here is that all the way back in the turn of the century with the revenue cutter Bear, carrying a herd of reindeer so that it would help to feed people who up to then had been dependent on a dwindling seal stock. And decades later, the successor to Bear, my Northwind, carrying a herd of muskox down underneath the flight deck in the open area down under the flight deck to provide a food and transport for a herd of muskox for the Greenland Home Rule government. The book is, once again, it's called The Great Ice Ship Bear. I doubt that she can be, that this book can be found in any place except a used book place. But it is highly recommended, and I and many thanks to my friend Amy at the Steamship Historical Society for the gift of it. I am enjoying it enormously, and so much so that I have made it my book today. The magazine today is also from the SSHSA, and it is the journal that is published four times a year by the Society. It is now called Power Ships. When I first joined, it was called Steamboat Bill. That was the name of the journal, and I really like that name. And to a sailor, the word bill has certain connotations which are really important. It is where the watch stations, the different duty stations of a ship in what's called the watch quarter and station bill. When the Society decided to change the name to Power Ships, they did not send any circularization out to the membership. If they had, I would have voted no. And I would have voted to keep the name. But then I still know how to adjust a magnetic compass. I know how to adjust a sextant. And I retain those skills, I hope. My time with Midori is going to prove whether I still can do all of those things. I may even buy a really good German Weems and Plath sextant and adjust it myself and see if I can still drop a 7-line cartwheel on a paper chart. All of this is to tell you that if you're interested in maritime history, I highly recommend that you go on to the Steamship Society of America website. And then if you feel that it is something that you would like to be a part of, send a signal to my friend Amy, who is the membership coordinator, and say, Amy, I am one of Captain Joe's people, and he says that I should get in touch with you, and she will take really good care of your membership. I had a signal today from my friend, colleague, neighbor next door, Dr. Phillips, and he sent me a quote from G. Captain. Now, I am delighted that Dr. Phillips is not only reading what he gets from the American Medical Association and from the physicians' colleges, of which he is a board-certified member of at least three of them, one of the most highly qualified physicians that I've ever known. and that he's also reading G Captain. And so this article is about Eastern Shipbuilding. Now, we all remember Eastern Shipbuilding because they were building four of the offshore patrol cutters, of whom number three was to be the next Ingham. And then because they had messed up the contract, and probably the Coast Guard had messed up their relationship with Eastern, they lost the contract. And now the first two, of whom the lead ship is Argus, the second one I think is Rush. I'm not too sure about that name. I know that John J.O.N. will correct me on this one. But whoever the second ship in the class was, Argus almost completed. It was my intent when I went to Key West for the Ingham reunion to also go to Eastern Shipbuilding, but I wasn't able to get anybody to talk to me. And so I delayed that visit, but that visit is coming. Eastern Shipbuilding, all you guys down there, you better hunker down into your bilges because the captain is headed your way, and I want to see what has happened to Argus, to the second ship of the class. I want to see how much you've gotten done on the ship, which is going to be Ingham, and on the fourth one. You don't get to just walk away from it, not with this captain. So I am going to go to Eastern. It's in Panama City. And in the meantime, this one was a shocker to me, and I don't shock easily. The Washington State Ferry System has let a contract with Eastern Shipbuilding to build three, with an option to build a fourth, hybrid electric ferries. The contract price that has been advertised by Eastern is almost three-quarters of a billion, bravo, billion dollars. And they were the low bidder, and I would have sent up a signal if I had known this was happening and said, beware of Eastern Shipbuilding bearing gifts, as in a particularly low bid. The ferry system had to get an exemption from the legislature to go outside the state of Washington to find a builder. I hope that whoever is administering this contract on behalf of the Washington State Ferry System is going to be fully aware of everything that has happened in the past with the Coast Guard and could well happen now and in the future with the Washington State Ferry System. So the 1 minute that I have left, I am going to point out that the Coast Guard is reporting that they have exceeded their recruiting goals. I hope that those recruiting goals have been because there are a flood of young people out there who want to be a part of what we do, and not because the standards have been lowered in order to bring more people in. Also, the Coast Guard is talking about building a second boot camp. We used to have two boot camps. There was one at Alameda and one, and of course, the one that we still have at Cape May. I hope that whoever is working this second boot camp problem is aware of the other things that have happened to us in our property management. Governor's Island, we should still have. We probably should not have decommissioned Alameda in the first place. I await with barely concealed anticipation to see where this is going to go, if it happens at all, and who is going to manage it. With that, my Omega watch that has to be wound every day, just like the chronometer has to be wound at exactly the same time every day. The officer of the deck reports that the captain, the hour is approaching noon, and the chronometers have been wound. I have wound my watch for today, and it is telling me that once again we have come to the end of our time together. Know that all of you who are on the binnacle list, as always, remain in the palm of my hand, and that the energy concentrated from all of us is headed your direction. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And Captain O'Brien is headed over here because we are recording this in a little bit different way than we normally do. So this is your Captain Joe. As always, I am on station and watching properly.